Hello, and welcome to Pinecone Podcast, where we have conversations about issues that are important to you, like faith and family, religion and relationships, Christianity and the church, and a whole lot more. So grab a cup of coffee or your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy Art, Wes, and Lacey as they have a conversation on Evergreen's Pinecone Podcast. On today's program, we're going to talk about community, specifically how to build community and what God does, how God builds community. So let me welcome Wes and Lacey onto our show. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Fantastic.
Great. Good to see y'all. It has certainly been an odd year, and this probably is at 6 months into 2020. We probably couldn't be a better subject to talk about than building community. But Wes, you recently had a sermon series, which kind of spawned, you know, this podcast. So start us off and just kind of let us know, how did you come up with this? How did you come up with this for a sermon series?
So I'm actually doing the four key things that I think the church in general should focus on, but as I'm defining it for, trying to define it for Evergreen, which I think is clearly found in the Bible. And basically what I want to do is I think as a pastor is lead people to connect people to God, connect people to one another, to help people grow in character, and then to equip them to make an impact outside the church. So I think those are the four things. So the first two, I did a kind of overview of that in March, and then I did the connecting people to God in April and May, and now I just moved to the community, connecting people to one another in this month. And next month I'll continue that by looking at the book of Ruth. So we'll see how community is built there. So, but, you know, there's a lot of different directions you could take that. But I think that one of the things we need to remember about our faith is that it's not just about connecting people to God. It is about connecting people to one another. The greatest commandment is love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. So that's, those two agendas are set forth. It's not, we can't just have the vertical relationship with God. We've also got to have the horizontal relationship with one another. And the purpose of the church is in part to connect us to one another and to get us to be that community that God has created us to be. And specifically, the content of this series, basically talking about the virtues that build community, the characteristics within people that would build community, is rooted in looking at our own current time and really seeing that in many ways the unwillingness to listen that characterizes so much of our political discourse, the shouting your slogans, the very partisan nature of politics leads to a disrespect of leaders who are on the other side, and then also just wanting everybody kind of to, you know, just this, it feels like everybody's saying, you got to come to my position right now. So I think that the Bible has a very different perspective on how community comes together. Very simple, clear Christian virtues that we ought to pursue, but to me just feel like they've, in our polarized society, seem to be thrown out the window. So things like learning to be a listener, humility, patience, and respect, service as a focus for our Christian life. And so I just wanted to challenge everybody to think about that. And I've had to challenge myself. I would say that in working on this sermon, I've probably seen more errors in myself and my way of relating than I have in many of my sermon series. So I've had to challenge myself again and again to say, you know, I really am not valuing other people's opinions. I'm overvaluing my own opinions, my own thoughts. I haven't been willing to listen. I'm not approaching people who have differences than me with from me or who are different from me or different perspective from me with a curiosity and a desire to understand better. So I've had to do a lot of repenting myself, because I've just realized that I have a lot of areas to grow in. So I'm definitely preaching this series to myself.
I was kind of surprised, I think, at the way you started it off with talking about virtues. It made sense as we got into it, because you were talking about God building the people that build communities. But I mean, I was just curious to know if how you came up with that track specifically.
So virtue is a definite emphasis in the Bible, and developing particular characteristics through the work of the Spirit of God and then our cooperation with the Spirit is something that is a huge theme in the Bible, but it's not often something that becomes a focus for a variety of reasons, and we can go into that if you want. But I just think that it's easy to think about, we think probably better about saying we need to do these certain things, and like, here, do these three things and then community be better, rather than paying attention to the type of person that we are and that out of which come those particular activities or particular ways of relating to people. So I just think I want us to say not just that we should do patient things, for example, but that patience, a willingness to endure obstacles to get to good things, should characterize us. And I think that's a process of developing patience within us. And then if we have that within us, and if we've developed the habit or characteristic of being willing to engage in a lengthy process for something good, and even put up with obstacles or difficulties that we find on the way, as just one example, then that's what gives us the strength to engage in any particular situation. So if you're a loving person, then you don't necessarily, you know, we don't have to set up rules for every encounter. It's the being the loving person that enables us to engage with love in every situation in which we're in. So you can see this in the Bible, for example, the fruit of the Spirit. It describes virtues, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, etc. These are characteristics that we are to aim at, not just things to do or rules to keep. So I don't have any problem with doing things or rules. Actually, things are good. But it's just a different way of looking at it. And I think ultimately, when we've internalized those rules and those perspectives and those ways of thinking, that those are what's going to contribute to the community in the long run.
Do you think that, I don't know what that was. Do you think that when people normally think of building community, they think of kind of looking outside themselves? What are the things in this community that need to be changed? And it sounds like what you're saying is the foundation of changing the community is each person looking inside themselves to figure out what needs to be changed.
That's right. I think that's well said. I'm going to actually use that. So you said very clearly, definitely, I think, an implicit thought in what I'm getting at. And just to add to that, it's not just that we should look at it that way. It's that God looks at it that way. You know, that's how he changes communities, is by turning individuals into the type of people who build community, starting with Jesus, you know, and set a whole different pattern for the way we relate to one another. So that's begun to change things in our world. And that's what could still happen through us as we follow his pattern. So, yeah, so I think that's a huge point, though, because usually when people think of community, it's easy to see the problems of others and not see the problems of ourselves. And the difference that we can make by being transformed and changing the way that we relate to others. And I think that the Bible gives us a proactive stance that whatever other people do, even if however well they react to it, we have a particular obligation to be the type of people and to do the types of things that build up the community. So that even in the case of being persecuted or hated, that we respond with a love and a compassion and care for people that characterizes Christ in the way he related to the world. But I do think it does make a difference too.
Do you think it's a little churchy though? I mean, it's easy to say you're going to have all these virtues, and I don't disagree. I think community is more about what you put into it than what you get out of it. But what about the other side, so to speak? What happens if you put patience, to use that example, you're really patient, you're really trying to listen to what someone else in the community is saying, but they absolutely refuse to do the same. What do you do?
Then that's where violence comes in. Then you can make use of violence. So that's a joke. That's a
kidding.
Joke.
Kidding.
Yeah, that's right. Lacey's getting worried again. So as far as being churchy, it's interesting that you say that, because I could argue similar points using psychology or ancient philosophy. So I think there's a recognition amongst the best human thinkers that you can't wait for the society to change. You have to change yourself, and then you will see society change. So I don't think that that's an insight that's unique to Christianity. I do think it's an insight that is very hard for us to implement, and that goes against our own tendency to seek ourselves first and to want to deal with our own anxiety and difficulties first, rather than stepping outside ourselves to serve others. Going to the second, so I don't know if y'all want to say anything about that, because it seems like that you brought up another point about what happens if people don't respond well to your efforts to build community. But I don't know if you wanted to talk about, hey, say anything else about beginning from ourselves.
No, maybe just to reiterate what you're saying, that it starts with ourselves, and it probably starts small. You know, I just as you were talking, I was thinking about how we're talking about building community. So it's not like you're stepping into a community that's already there and changing it. So if you build it, it's like you start with one or two or three or a small community and grow out from there. And maybe that helps in that perspective too, that we're not necessarily trying to go in and change the whole world or change the political landscape. We just change what's right within our community at the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and go ahead, Lacey, look, you want to say something about it?
Yeah, I think the neat thing about focusing on yourself and changing things within yourself and building up virtue within yourself is that we are all involved in a variety of communities. We're involved in our church community, we're involved in our neighborhood community, we're involved in, you know, our kids' community, their friends and their parents. We're involved in a variety of different types of communities. And when we focus on ourselves and make changes within ourselves, that is then going to ripple effect into each of those areas.
Yes.
So I think that, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's good. I think one thing, that you brought up there, Art, is really good, that you said that you got to start small, you know, even, And in the process of building relationships, you know, some first efforts even might be rebuffed, but you can, but over time you can make a difference. So, and I think even, you know, I think even of your relationship with me, Art, is not, you know, I don't think, I mean, our relationship, I would say, has been characterized by considerable harmony. I mean, I don't really ever recall any time where we were seriously upset at one another. You might have been upset with me many times that just don't know. But like when we were doing the outtakes of this podcast. But anyway, we made some false starts here, but I think we're rolling now.
Yeah, much better.
So like, you know, I came to this church 5.5 years ago, and I think our first conversation might have even been, I don't know whether we talked when I first came and visited, but you know, I remember I called you when your mom was dying, you know, just to see how you're doing. You were down in Myrtle Beach, so I remember that very well. And then, you know, we developed a friendship in part because of our connection. It actually began probably more because our children connected together. And so gradually we talked more, again, not that we ever had like a negative relationship, but we talked more. And then after Leanne, your wife, died, that's when probably when we spent the most time together. It was like for a year after that, you all came over almost every Sunday afternoon. The kids would play, we would take walks, we'd talk through it, we'd walk through that together. And so maybe even if we don't talk as much as we did before, we've got that foundation that's been built that could not exist, you know, didn't exist the same way at the beginning of 2015. So that's been a process of us getting together, and I could see all my relationships like that. But I think then, but the same principle we should apply to dealing with people with whom we might be at odds. You know, I've heard many times people will say things like, yeah, they're never going to listen to that, you know. And it's like, well, maybe we could shoot a little bit lower instead of saying you state your view and they change their view and completely agree with you. Maybe we just get a little more understanding of each other and we begin to chip away at it, you know. I think that that's how things work. And maybe you talk to someone in the community that you've never talked to before, or you talk to someone who's of a different political opinion than you, or of a different religious viewpoint, or in a different sphere of life. You begin to build those relationships. And of course, you can't just do that on your own. Like, you can't establish the whole community for Sevier County just by being more friendly and reaching out to people, but you can be a part of that. So that's kind of how I would see it.
Yeah, I agree. When you were talking about that, I was thinking about, you said you can't just state your opinion and the other person changes theirs. Maybe it just starts with you state your opinion, or you let them state their opinion first, and then you state yours. Yeah, I think about you, Wes, and anytime, and not a lot have I heard this, but anytime someone's kind of like, what would Wes say, or how does Wes act, or impersonate Wes in a sense, the first thing that always seems to come up is they'll go, how does that make you feel? Oh, you have a reputation. Really? You have a reputation for asking, how does that make you feel? And at first people could think that you're just trying, well, no, go ahead and say what you were saying, because then that gives me a chance to say what I say. But you genuinely want to know how the other person feels about whatever it is. And I think that's just a huge first step.
And I think even as you think through, you know, you said shoot a little lower. How about no one states their opinion and you just say, do you want to have lunch together? You know, and start building a relationship from there. Figure out the things you do have in common. I think it's a lot harder to be upset with someone that you know well. You're less likely to form a judgment, a quick judgment or something, if you know someone well, and you know where their heart is, which is why being quick to listen is so important.
Yeah.
So is that the virtue that you think you have to work on the most, Lacey? Listen?
I think I have to work on all of them the most. but yeah, being quick to listen is definitely is something that I'm trying to challenge myself to do better.
Yeah, I'd really like you to be able to listen a little bit better, Lacey, actually. No, I would say you're a very good listener, and I've appreciated how you ask good questions to people and really listen to them. So I think you're a good community builder.
Thank you.
So I truly mean that.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah. I don't know, what virtue do you think have you been challenged on, Art?
You mean for you? What do I think you should? Actually, for me, it kind of probably is a little bit listen. It's not that I don't really listen to people. But when you follow that, you know, in James, in the book, in the epistle of James, I think it's in the first chapter where he says, quick to listen, then is it slow to speak, right? And slow to become angry or whatever. Sometimes, I don't know if this is going to quite come out right, maybe, but sometimes I could be so eager to state my opinion, I don't listen. But then sometimes I'll listen and then not say my opinion. And I think that's important too. To remember, it says slow to speak. It doesn't say don't speak at all. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, it's listening to the other person in all situations, not just listening, waiting my turn, but just truly listening to what they have to say, and then choosing what or whether to respond to that, but not being afraid, you know, afraid to engage in that. So to me, it's kind of a double thing. It's listening, speaking, and probably not becoming angry as well. So
they kind of go together.
Yeah.
Well, so another question let's say when we're dealing with individuals, there's much more possibility for this type of engagement. The more people you add to it, the more difficult it becomes. Communities as a whole have much less moral imagination than individuals and less ability to engage thoughtfully. So the things that tend to come out, you know, the kind of the worst tendencies tend to come out the bigger the group is. So kind of fitting into what you're saying there, Art, you asked like, well, what do you do when you can't engage or someone refuses to engage? And someone refuses to engage. And then how do you respond to that? Well, and I think that happens on a larger level. So to try and get, for example, the Democrats and Republicans as a group to come together and listen to each other, would be an extremely challenging thing. However, you might get one Democrat and one Republican to do so. It'd be a lot easier task. And then that could have some ripple effects. But nonetheless, when you're dealing on a national level or you're dealing with recalcitrants in community, sometimes you have to just exercise power. And so that's, you know, I was saying violence tongue in cheek, but even sometimes that, where, you know, Germany and the United States in World War II, you know, basically it was just about power against power and who is going to impose their will. And that wasn't necessarily bad in and of itself, though it was occasioned because of sin. But I think one of the things that we can do is that I want to read a quote to you. This is one of my favorite quotes because I think it gets into the complexities of life. And this is by Reinhold Niebuhr, who's one of my favorite theologians. I've learned a ton from him. And what his basic framework was to say, in life, we're going to have to engage in some fights and some struggles. But he said we need to be in the battle and above it. And so listen to how he describes it. He says to be in a battle means to defend a cause against its peril, to protect a nation against its enemies, to strive for truth against error, to defend justice against injustice. To be above the battle means that we understand how imperfect the cause is which we defend, that we contritely acknowledge the sins of our own nations, that we recognize the common humanity which binds us to even the most terrible foes, and that we know also of our common need of grace and forgiveness. To be above the battle must also mean some reverent and pitying comprehension of the vastness of the catastrophe, he's talking about World War II, which has engulfed us all, friend and foe, and some sense of pity for the victims of the struggle, whether ally or enemy. So to me, that really captures, like, even when we have to, like, literally fight tooth and nail, that we've got to preserve a part of us that can see beyond that struggle and have this grace towards the other side, a willingness to reconcile, a sense of our own sin and need for grace, and also just a sense of sadness that we have to be in these types of situations in this world. And so I think that is also part of community in a fallen world. But I think if we can just, it's so easy in the midst of this life as we're focused on our own interests and our own issues, some of which are good, some of which are bad, some of which are really about truth, usually with some mixture of our own sinfulness, that we can step outside that too and see ourselves in that conflict and be able to recognize our own sins, our own need for grace, even if we have to contend for something that's a legitimate point, that we have this sense of humility about it.
That's really fantastic. I mean, just remembering that the people you're wrestling with are also created in the image of God and are also loved by God and even liked by God. I think it could just really change the way that people treat each other. I love that we're doing this sermon series, but if you could like move outside of the sermon series and actually go into people's homes and say, hey, here's how I think this would be a great way to implement this in your life, what would you say?
I think probably one of the key insights that I would take away myself and that I'm trying to implement is that let not our first impulse be judgment when we encounter the other and the different, but curiosity and a willingness to discover. To me, that's like, if I could say every day, those little things that hit me where I say, ah, that's kind of dumb or gross or whatever, disgusting, or that person, you know, there's just those makes me upset or that frustrates me. If I can move a little bit more towards saying, you know, help me understand, this is different than what I've thought. Help me understand what your thinking is there. Then I think that would be the that's, to me, makes it very concrete. So I remember one woman was talking about a young man who came up to her in a school. She was teaching in school, and he's like, I don't even know why he said this or the occasion for it, but he's like, man, I can't stand the idea of going to church. You know, it's just a bunch of hypocrites and I don't buy any of that stuff. And I remember this person said to me, you know, I wanted to give him a tract or something like that, you know, tract. So just make sure that was clear. you know, and it was immediately to formulate a response. And I think, you know, I've done that innumerable times, but being able to see it, hear this person express it, made me able to reflect upon it, I think, a little bit more, and to say, you know, in that instance, the first thing I might say is, wow, you know, that sounds like you know, I'm sorry that that's been your experience of the church. I'd love for you to tell me more about what your experience has been like, you know, what's been your thinking about that, and invite that person to share. And they may or may not do it, but I think that opens a door in moving towards them and what they're thinking. So that's where even something that, you know, like where we're going to feel defensive, Christians are a bunch of bigots. You know, it's like, huh, you know, tell me more about your experience of that. Christians, and, you know, even to say, yeah, I know a lot of Christians, and yeah, that we do have a problem with that. So
yeah, I think a lot of times when people say something for the shock value, it's because they want to be heard. And so giving them the opportunity to do that and just always being, I don't know, being at a place where you are willing to listen to people who disagree with you. Hey, let's go grab a coffee and you can tell me more about that. It even kind of takes down their defenses, I think, when you're willing to be relational rather than reactive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good word. You know, not being so reactive to people's differences, even if they're really wrong, you know, just that we can kind of let that, you know, flow by us a little bit and move towards that person. I really think that's the heart of almost everything here. You know, and you know, it's like there's probably no word that produces more polarization in our language today than Trump. So you just say it, and anybody thinks that, it's just that people are highly reactive one way or the other. And I think that we can be a model of that by saying, you know, just share, tell them what your thinking is on that. That's all we need to do.
And I don't just assume that they think a certain way either. You know, if someone, I don't know if we want to go down the Trump trail, but if someone says they're Republican, or the other person says they're Democrat, we just assume that they believe or think things about Trump automatically that probably aren't true. So it's genuine. I think it goes back to the listening. How do you really feel? What do you really think? Instead of just thinking, because you said one thing, that just must be how you think. And I think that's what drives the polarization, is the assumptions.
It's true. And you know, we can think about this like in big picture terms, like Republicans versus Democrats, or, you know, Christians versus non-Christians. But it also happens within our own communities with people that we usually agree with on a lot of things. And I think has happened a lot with pandemic stuff, just, you know, not being reactive to the little things, because we also need to build the communities that we are already a big part of. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think that, and this brings up another point that on pandemic stuff is a good example, because in many ways, you know, it's not like you might say like racism or abortion. You know, there's a clear biblical position. The Bible's clearly against racism and abortion.
Sure.
But in regards to how to handle a pandemic and the best strategies, you know, the Bible has some principles there, but like there's a lot of differences that you could have and still be well within a biblical framework. And also the thing that I see is, you know, we have a governor and we have a mayor who are making decisions based on the data they have available to them in order to make the best decisions they can to protect their people, but also to protect the economy and so on. And some of them are right and some of them are wrong. But part of building community is being willing to be respectful to the hierarchy that is actually exists. And so it is. And so it is in the church. You know, I definitely feel this myself. I mean, a lot of the decisions we make are kind of like a lot of things we deal with in church, maybe about theology or about church government principles and so on. Those are the kinds of issues. But now we're having to make decisions as elders on the basis about things related to public health, which is, so we have to make, we've made the decision, that we're going to meet indoors and we're asking people that to wear masks, because based on what we've looked at, we see there's a particular threat to gatherings indoors that masks can mitigate. Now, we we could be wrong on that. And I'm sure there's some people who disagree with that. But it's like we have to make the best decision based on what we see. And part of furthering community is on every level, showing respect to the hierarchy that is established. And that doesn't mean that you agree with them and just say you're right 100%, but we've got to give deference to them. And so I think that, almost every one of us has governors or knows a governor who did something differently than what they thought they should do, because there's such a variety of things they're doing to mitigate the coronavirus and its spread. And I think that we should show respect to all of them. We should be okay with sharing our view where it's appropriate. But also, even like I think our Heidelberg Catechism says we should be patient with their failings, recognize that they're fallible people, but God still chooses to rule us through them. So that's an element of community that's important, that is one that's not highly emphasized in our day, even amongst Christians. I've heard a lot of Christians, who support Trump, they'll say, this is my president, and I've never seen people dishonor the president like this, and it's wrong. And I said, really? I just remember many people dishonoring the president Obama. And I think that the point is we should honor both, because they are the governors whom God put over us before Obama and now Trump, even if we disagree with them. So I think that is actually a huge part of community and making community able to be the type of place where that goes forward, that Christians could really stand out. I call it a nonpartisan political respect.
I value all of those things. I think that they all, I think you're spot on with all of it. I think the thing that I have struggled with the most that this sermon series has brought out for me is I think I am way more reactive to people I'm really close with, that I'm having disagreements with, because it threatens something important to me.
Yes.
So I think that has been a struggle that this building community is addressing. Like, I really just need to go back and work on the virtues in me. Because it's easy, kind of. I mean, for me, it's not difficult for me to show respect to both presidents, even if I disagree with them. It's not necessarily difficult for me to show respect and disagree with a governor. But for the people that are close to me, if there is something happening that causes hardship, or that causes a difference of opinion and it threatens my sense of security, that's really when the virtues kind of come into play.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think sometimes we can forget what a community is that can lead to that. It's not necessarily just a group of people that agree with us about everything. Like, there's something, kind of where I'm going with that, there's something that draws us together and makes us a community. Like, maybe just using the church, because we talked about the church. So we're all members of the same church, so that we're a community. But that doesn't mean we all think the same thing or believe the same thing or do the same thing or enjoy the same thing. It's kind of like if you broaden that out in your neighborhood, you're all part of the same community, but you certainly aren't all Christians, or you aren't all Democrats, you aren't all Republicans. And sometimes we can go into community and our goal is to make sure everybody thinks like us and believes like us and does what we do and wants to do what we do. And we forget that the difference in people is really what makes the community interesting, what makes the community what we want to be a part of. And we don't celebrate the differences sometimes because we're looking to make sure everything is like us. And I think that's what kind of brings us to the point where we want to express our opinion or make everybody believe like we do, because we think that's what community is and we're afraid of the differences.
Well, I think it's in part because when you're close to people and you have a similar perspective, differences can feel like a threat, because it feels like it could lead to abandonment. That's like if people begin to hold a different viewpoint. So it can actually be really scary when you find yourself disagreeing. You don't know where that's going to lead. So, but ironically, it's that same fear that brings our anxiety up that is going to keep us from actually engaging well in those situations. So this takes a lot of skill. And I mean, we could probably do a whole lot talk on that. I think you've nailed something there, Lacey, that is really good, that it is scary to find people you're close to disagreeing, because it feels like that could mean abandonment. And sometimes it actually does, you know. So I think like what we have to say, I think, you know, it seems like one of the things we have to do in order to be able to develop these types of virtues is on the one side is really to ground our sense of well-being and security in God and his relationship with us, and not in the specific relationships we have with other people. But then on the other side is to really be able to foster in our relationships a context where people can really say what they think and still be affirmed and accepted and know that you care for them. So there's a safety in sharing your view that is made very clear. And so I think that's to me like what gentleness and patience does, is it creates a safety for sharing a variety of opinions. And you know, I have to be very sensitive to this, because I mean I can come across, I know, very forcefully, and plus I have a leadership position as father and pastor, that I can discourage people from actually sharing their opinions. And I always have to remind myself that I have that authority position. So what I say can feel a lot of force. I've got to really encourage people, make sure it's okay for them to share their opinion and make it clear that it's okay to disagree. And also even communicate things like, but I still have to make decisions based on what I think, you know? And so, but that's okay. You know, it's difficult. It's difficult.
Ben and I are going through the process of becoming foster parents. And in that process, we have talked about how when you are dealing with trauma or hurt or anything that can make you angry or reactive, let's say, your IQ actually drops. And mm-hmm. So one of the ways of combating that is practicing how to respond in times where you're not in trauma or in a difficult situation. And so I think building these virtues in and practicing these virtues in times where we're not in a situation to be reactive will then allow us to actually implement those virtues when we are feeling reactive. It'll be more natural to us if we have practiced them than if we're not being intentional about practicing them and come across that situation that makes us feel threatened. I don't feel threatened, but necessarily by the President of the United States making some weird tweet. But I do feel threatened when someone makes it or makes a statement that is that kind of feels like it threatens our relationship in some way. So responding out of love because I practiced it is, I don't know. That's just something I'm kind of taking away from this conversation. I hope other people do too.
Good. Sure. Building community is a process. That's why it's called building community, not just being community. So thanks. Thanks, Wes. Thanks, Lacey. This is a great question. This was good. I appreciate you all. And if you're listening, don't forget to subscribe to Pinecone Podcast on whatever app you use or whatever you're listening to us on. And we'll be talking more, I'm sure, about just this subject as well as a lot of others. So thanks a lot. Everybody have a nice day and God bless you.